Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour, Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation out of the 12th Hour. In the Liberty Hill, Texas, today is August the 9th, 2014, or it is April 14, 2018. We will start our second service on this Sabbath day with a song entitled, Yahshua Saves. We have heard the joyful song, Yahshua saves, Yahshua saves. Spread the tidings all around, Yahshua saves, Yahshua saves. Lay the news to every land, and the seas and cross away. On the stairs are Yah's command. Yahshua says, Yahshua says. Wafted on the rolling tide. Yahshua says, Yahshua says. Hail to sinners far and wide. Yahshua says, Yahshua says. Sing ye islands of the sea, echo back ye ocean cave. Her shall keep her to believe. Yahshua saves, Yahshua saves. Sing above the battle's cry. Yahshua saves, Yahshua saves. By his death and endless life, Yahshua saves, Yahshua saves. Sing it softly through the gloom, when the heart for mercy craves. Sing in triumph o'er the tomb, Yahshua saves, Yahshua saves. Give the winds a mighty voice. Yahshua saves, Yahshua saves. Let the nations now rejoice. Yahshua saves, Yahshua saves. Shout salvation full and free. Highest hills and deepest caves. This our song of victory. Yahshua saves, Yahshua saves. Part 12, Town and Greetings, Volunteer Number 11. We're going to continue now with our series, The Everlasting Kingdom of David. We are going to defer to a prayer thought. Taken from the book of Judges. Start with chapter 1. Now after the death of the Joshua, it came to pass that the children of Israel asked the Yahweh, saying, Who shall go up for us against the Canaanites first to fight against them? And the Yahweh said, Judah shall go up. Behold, I have delivered the land into his hand. Okay, now isn't this amazing? It says there in Zechariah 14, we just fast forward a little bit over here. I think it's about verse 14. It talks about Judah shall also fight at Jerusalem when that great battle takes place here in these last days. Let's just turn to it and read it. It says that, And Judah also shall fight at Jerusalem, and the wealth of all the heathen round about shall be gathered together, gold and silver and apparel in great abundance. So Judah is going to be the first of the 12 tribes of the 144,000 that is going to be commissioned to go up to Jerusalem when Zechariah 14 war gets full blown and deliver Jerusalem. And typical Judah is going to deliver Jerusalem again. Judah is the first one commissioned when they went into the land after Moses died. Joshua took them over into the land. And it says, after the death of Joshua, it came to pass that the children of Israel asked the Yahweh, saying, Who shall go up for us against the Canaanites first to fight against him. So it actually, after Joshua died in the land, and the people were, they didn't have a leader. And so they asked Yahweh, well, who's going to go up for us? And Yahweh said, Judah shall go up. My lawgiver, in other words. For I have delivered the land into his hand. So Judah now is in charge of the land. And Judah said unto Simeon, his brother, come up with me into my lot, that we may fight against the Canaanites, and I likewise will go with thee into thy lot. So Simeon went with him. And Judah went up, and Yahweh delivered the Canaanites and the Perizzites into their hand, and they slew of them and the Bezek 10,000 men. Okay, now it says in verse 5, and they found Adonibezek in the Bezek, and they fought against him, and they slew the Canaanites and the Perizzites. But Adonibezek fled, and they pursued after him and caught him and cut off his thumbs and his great toes. And Adonibezek said, threescore and ten kings, having their thumbs and their great toes cut off, gathered their meat under my table, as I have done, so Elohim hath requited me. And they brought him to Yahrushim, and there he died. Now the children of Judah had fought against Yahrushim and had taken it. Well, you see this right here? Now the children of Judah had fought against Jerusalem and had taken it and smitten it with the edge of the sword and to set the city on fire. Now let's go back and read Zechariah 14:14 again. Let's read verse 13. And it shall come to pass in that day that a great tumult from the Yahshua, the Son, shall be among them, and they shall lay hold every one on the hand of his neighbor, and his hand shall rise up against the hand of his neighbor. Okay, that's what's happening right now in Israel. Iraq is part of Israel. Iraq, Muslims are going in there, banding together the Muslim Brotherhood, and they're killing all of those sects that have converted to Catholicism and hiding under the name of Christianity. They're killing all of those. They're seeking them out everywhere. They're now headed for Baghdad, and they've been killing them everywhere. Wherever they can find these sects of converted to Catholicism. Alright? What's wrong with all of this? Well, number one, you have a prophecy in Daniel that talks about the king of the north and king of the south fighting against each other here in these last days. And the king of the south, he's in power right now, and he's going after the king of the north, and the king of the north is the Pope, the Catholic Church. The king of the south is Arab, Muslim, Obama. That's what's going on right now. Okay. It says in verse 14, and Judah also shall fight at Yahrushim. In addition to these brother against brother killing each other and besieging Jerusalem, says Judah, my lawgiver, is also going to fight at Yahrushim here in these last days. All right. Let's go back now to our reading in Judges chapter 1. Now it says, now the children of Judah, verse 8, had fought against Jerusalem, and had taken it and smitten it with the edge of the sword and set the city on fire. And afterward the children of Judah went down to fight against the Canaanites that dwelt in the mountain and in the south and in the valley. And Judah went against the Canaanites that dwelt in Hebron. Now this, when David became king, this is where he first ruled from, was Hebron. Now today, the Hebron is taken over by the Muslims, the Palestinians. Now the name of Hebron before was Kirjath Arba, and they slew Shishaya and Ahiman and Talmaiah, and from thence he went against the inhabitants of Debir, and the name of Debir before was Kirjath Sefer. And Caleb said, he that smiteth curds off a sefer and taketh it, to him will I give Aksah, my daughter, to wife. And Othniel, the son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother, took it, and he gave him Aksah, his daughter, to wife. And it came to pass, when she came to him, that she moved him to ask of her father a field. And she lighted from off her ass, and Caleb said unto her, What wilt thou? And she said unto him, Give me a blessing, for thou hast given me a south land. Give me also springs of water. And Caleb gave her the upper springs and the nether springs. And the children of the Kenites, Moses' father-in-law, went up out of the city of the palm trees with the city of Judah into the wilderness of Judah, which lieth in the south of Arad, and they went and dwelt among the people. And Judah went with Simeon his brother, and they slew the Canaanites that inhabited Zephath, and utterly destroyed it. And the name of the city was called Hormah. Also Judah took Gaza with the coast thereof, and Ashkelon with the coast thereof, and Ekron with the coast thereof. And Yahweh was with Judah. And he drave out the inhabitants of the mountain, but could not drive out the inhabitants of the valley, because they had chariots of iron. And they gave Hebron unto Caleb, as Moses said, and he expelled thence the three sons of Anak. And the children of Benjamin did not drive out the Jebusites that inhabited Jerusalem, but the Jebusites dwelt with the children of Benjamin in Jerusalem unto this day. Okay, now we have those Jebusites again in the form of the Palestinians in Jerusalem, occupying the east part and taking over the Temple Mount and just giving the Jews fits over there in Jerusalem, trying to take over the whole city. And the house of Joseph, verse 22, Judges chapter 1. In the house of Joseph, they also went up against Bethel, and the Yahweh was with them. And the house of Joseph sent to decry Bethel. Now the name of the city before was Luz. And the spies saw a man come forth out of the city, and they said unto him, Show us, we pray thee, the entrance into the city, and we will show thee mercy. When he showed them the entrance into the city, they smote the city with the edge of the sword, but they let go the man and all his family. And the man went into the land of the Hittites and built a city and called the name thereof Luz, which is the name thereof unto this day. So you see what happens to the enemy whenever he decides to do the right thing and help you out, help Yahweh's people out. Yahweh will protect that man and give him a posterity that will go on to the end of time. That's the way it is today with this man here that directed the children of Israel how to get into the city. Kind of like Rahab the harlot. She sheltered the two spies that came from Israel, spied the land, and they told her she and her house would be delivered whenever they came in to take the city of Jericho. It's the same thing here. Neither did Manasseh drive out the inhabitants of Beth Shean and her town, nor Tanakh and her towns, nor the inhabitants of Dor and her town, nor the inhabitants of Adliam and her towns, nor the inhabitants of Megiddo and her towns, but the Canaanites would dwell in that land. Verse 28, And it came to pass when Israel was strong that they put the Canaanites to tribute and did not utterly drive them out. Neither did Ephraim drive out the Canaanites that dwelt in Gezer, but the Canaanites dwelt in Gezer among them. Neither did Zebulun drive out the inhabitants of Kithron, nor the inhabitants of Nahalol, But the Canaanites dwelt among them and became tributaries. Neither did Asher drive out the inhabitants of Akcho, nor the inhabitants of Zidon, nor of the Arlab, nor of the Akzib, nor of the Helaba, nor of the Aphix, nor of the Rehob. But the Asherites dwelt among the Canaanites, the inhabitants of the land, for they did not drive them out. So actually the Canaanites are the descendants of Abraham that finally made it into the land with Joshua. Verse 33, Judges chapter 1. Neither did Naphtali drive out the inhabitants of Beth Shemesh, nor the inhabitants of Beth Anath, but he dwelt among the Canaanites, the inhabitants of the land. Nevertheless, the inhabitants of Beth Shemesh and of Beth Anath became tributaries unto them, and the Amorites forced the children of Dan into the mountain, for they would not suffer them to come down to the valley. But the Amorites would dwell in Mount Heres, in Ajalon, and Shaalbim, but yet the hand of the house of Joseph prevailed, so that they became tributaries, and the coast of the Amorites was from the going up to Akrabim, from the rock and upward. Okay, end of chapter 1. Let's go right on into chapter 2, verse 1. And an angel of the Yahweh came up from Gilgal to Bochim and said, I made you to go up out of Egypt. Okay, who was that? That was that rock in the cloud, Yahshua, that Paul talked about in Corinthians. He said, Yahshua is that rock in the cloud that with Moses led the children of Israel out of Egypt. Okay, so now here comes this angel again now. He's visiting now Joshua and the children of Israel after getting to the land. He said, I made you to go up out of Egypt and have brought you into the land, unto the land which I swear unto your fathers. So who is this? This is Yahshua that is guiding this great people of Israel. And I said, I will never break my covenant with you. And ye shall make no league with the inhabitants of this land. Ye shall throw down their altars, but ye have not obeyed my voice. Why have you done this? Exodus 23:32. Wherefore I also said, I will not drive them out from before you, but they shall be as thorns in your sides, and their gods shall be a snare unto you. And it came to pass when the angel of the Yahweh spake these words unto all the children of Israel, that the people lifted up their voice and wept, and they called the name of that place Bochim, and they sacrificed there unto the Yahweh. And when Joshua had let the people go, the children of Israel went every man unto his inheritance to possess the land, and the people served the Yahweh all the days of Joshua, and all the days of the elder that outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of the Yahweh that he did for Israel. And Joshua the son of Nun, the servant of the Yahweh, died, being 110 years old. And they buried him in the border of his inheritance, in the Timnath, Heres, in the mount of the Ephraim, on the north side of the hill Gaash. And also all that generation were gathered unto their fathers. And there arose another generation after them, which knew not the Yahshua, nor yet the works which he had done for Israel. And this is talking about the son, Yahshua. He's always been the leader of that army from heaven, coming down to fight for and deliver his people. And the children of Israel did evil on the side of Yahweh and served Balaam. And they forsook the Yahweh, the Elohim of their fathers, which brought them out of the land of Egypt, and followed other gods of the gods of the people that were round about them, and bowed themselves unto them, and provoked the Yahweh's anger. And they forsook the Yahshua and served Baal and Asherah, and the anger of the Yahweh was hard against Israel, and he delivered them into the hands of the spoilers, or spoiled them. And he sold them into the hands of their enemies round about, so that they could not any longer stand before their enemies. Whithersoever they went out, the hand of Yahweh was against them for evil, as Yahweh has said, and as Yahweh has sworn unto them, and they were greatly distressed. Nevertheless, Yahshua raised up judges, which delivered them out of the hand of those that spoiled them. Okay, and the antitype, Yahweh raised up antitypical Elijah, Malachi 4:5, to deliver and to be a judge over the house of Israel once again. He set up judges. That's what Elijah is. And so he started with Gilead Center, 2002, judgment at the house of Yahweh. He started with Rodeshans, the ancient man before the house. So nevertheless, the Yahshua raised up judges, and the first one in our day would be antitypical Elijah. He would be the master prophet Jezreel, Hosea's firstborn. It would be the antitypical David with that title. Okay. And he said, nevertheless, the Yahshua raised up judges which delivered them out of the hand of those that spoil them. Okay. And yet they would not hearken unto their judges, but they went a horn after other gods and bowed themselves unto them. They turned quickly out of the way which their fathers walked in the old band of the commandments of the Yahweh, but they did not so. And when the Yahshua raised them up judges, then the Yahshua was with the judge and delivered them out of the hand of their enemies all the days of the judge. So Yahweh, when he raised up Elijah in his last days by prophecy, Malachi 4:5, he delivered the house of David out of the hand of the spoilers, or out of the hand of the house of Esau and King Saul. For it repented the Yahshua because of their groanings by reason of them that oppressed them and vexed them. And it came to pass when the judge was dead that they returned and corrupted themselves more than their fathers and the following other gods to serve them and to bow down unto them. They ceased not from their own doings nor from their stubborn way. And the anger of the Yahweh was hard against Israel. And he said, because that this people hath transgressed my covenant which I commanded their fathers and have not hearkened unto my voice, I also will not henceforth drive out any from before them of the nations which Joshua left when he died, that through them I may approve Israel, whether they will keep the way of the Yahweh to walk therein as their fathers did keep it, or not. Therefore the Yahweh left those nations without driving them out hastily, neither delivered he them into the hand of Joshua. Okay, we have type and antitype. Alright, let us break off here now and get to our main theme. The way that the kingdom is to come. This is Time of Greeting, Volume 2, Number 11 by Levitt Hollis. This is Part 12. This is given October the 11th, 1947. So, isn't this amazing? October the 11th. That is my father's birthday. It's on October the 11th, 1947. My dad was 57 years old on that day. Okay, it says, for the Jews, it says the way that the kingdom is to come. Okay, let's find out then the way that the kingdom is to come today. For the Jews had built up an erroneous conception of what the kingdom was to be and how and when it was to come. And so when the Yahshua, we're dealing with the Son here. He's the king, he's the angel that Yahweh sends out that goes before his people. Okay, It says when the Yahshua exposed their misconception, they became indignant. They were very angry, not because of the kingdom which the Savior disclosed was not much more bountiful and prosperous than they had ever conceived, but because their errors were exposed. Thus the heaven's favored people, the Jews, and when we say Jews, we're talking about, that's a short for Judah, one of the 12 tribes. And let's keep in mind that the Pharisees had taken over Judah, and they were not of the house of Israel. The Pharisees were not of the house of Israel. They were from the land of the enemy, their half-brother. They were descendants of them Ishmaelites. Believe it or not, they were the people that hated Yahshua and what the house of Israel stood for. Okay, they piled error upon error and brought upon themselves shame and disaster. Now, I could be very wrong what I just said about them being descendants of Ishmael, but I'll do my work on that again and confirm that. But I know they were not of the seed of Isaac. I know that. Should the Christians' idea of the kingdom be somewhat erroneous too? And should we fail to profit by the mistakes of the Jews? Then our fall would be even greater than that of the Jews. Let us therefore lay aside any preconceived ideas that we may have and accept the Yahshua's revealed truth, which brings us his idea of the kingdom fresh today. Matthew 13:24-26. Another parable put he forth unto them, saying, for the kingdom of heaven is likened unto a man which sowed good seed in his field. Now, when he mentions this kingdom of heaven in this parable, he's talking about the kingdom, everlasting kingdom of David in the 12th hour. So all these verses here in Matthew 13 that talks about the kingdom of heaven, and there's, I know, at least 14, and maybe even up to 25 verses. I have to recount them again. I think I've got them counted here already. Let's see. Yeah, I think it goes up to around, 25. I got 25 there. Okay, and that was in, it's 25 times that it's, the kingdom of heaven is mentioned, I believe, or 23 times. Anyway, let's go ahead. So he said, another parable paid forth unto them, saying that the kingdom of heaven, the everlasting kingdom of David, with Elijah David at the helm, is likened unto a man which sowed good seed in his field. But while the men slept, his enemy came and sowed tares among the wheat and went his way. But when the blade was sprung up and brought forth fruit, there and appeared the tares also. Okay, these tares and the wheat grain appeared in 2002 for the first separation of the two in the church. Appeared at Gilead Center. And that's where the first separation of the wheat and tares took place, 2002. It took a whole year from Passover to Passover, 2003. So it says, for the pestering tares which grow higher and sturdier than the wheat, Satan inspires and by them fabricates erroneous theories concerning Elohim's plan. Now, did you get that? The tares grow taller and sturdier than the wheat. So go out into a wheat field and look at these tares that are towering over the wheat. They're in clumps all over the wheat field. So, if you want to separate the tares from the wheat, let them go together until the harvest, until they get full grown. Then all you can do is just watch and look. The tares stands up head and shoulders over the wheat. Okay, so it's not hard to identify because the tares put on grain too. It looks just like the wheat. But because they're taller, and you can tell which one's tares, and so all you gotta do is just reach down with your hand and with a handful pull out a clump of those tares. and you pull them up by the roots, but you leave the wheat in the ground with their roots. And then when you go in later to harvest your wheat, you cut the wheat off on top of the ground. You don't pull the roots up. The tares is what you pull the roots up. Okay, the tares according unto the parable so closely resemble the wheat that they cannot be discovered except after they bear fruit. So you have to let them bear fruit, and they stand up taller than the wheat, but they're very similar. So you know, you just go get the tall, go with the tall ones, and leave the others alone. I know, I've been in wheat fields. Wheat field looks like an ocean of water. It's level across the top as far as the eye can see. The wheat all grows to the same height, proportionately, just like a tabletop. But the tares apparently grow taller and sturdier, and they tower over the wheat. That is, they can be discerned only by the final results brought forth by their works. And what can these results be? What else from the ideas that are not heaven-inspired may you expect in the church? The selfishness, egotism, bigotry, and worldliness, prejudice, hatred against reproof, and light on their evil deeds. It is not their aim to exalt themselves rather than to exalt Yahshua and His truth. Okay, no, let's do that again. Is it, they're asking the question here, is it not their aim to exalt themselves rather than to exalt Yahshua and His truth? This I know also, that in the last days, perilous times, shall come. For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient unto parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasures, more than lovers of Elohim, having a form of righteousness, but denying the power thereof. From such turn away, for of this sort are they which creep into houses and lead captive silly women laden with sin, led away with the divers lust, ever learning and never able to come unto the knowledge of the truth. 2 Timothy 3:1-7. This fits Gilead Center more than it did the Shepherd Rod movement from 1937. This fits Gilead Center. Because when we got hold of the sanctuary truth restored unto us in 1970, from then on it was always uncovering new truth and new light, and we were always searching for new light and new truth to unfold from that moment on. I know I did. That was in my heart. I couldn't go one day at all without getting into the Word and studying it. And new stuff, all time pursuing new knowledge. Okay, Matthew 13:27-30. So the servants of the householder came and said unto him, Sir, didst not thou sow good seed in thy field? From whence then hath it tares? He said unto them, An enemy hath done this. For the servants said unto him, Wilt thou then that we go and gather them up? But he said, Nay, lest while you gather up the tares, you root up also the wheat with them. Let both grow together until the harvest. And in the time of the harvest, I will say unto the reapers, Gather ye together first the tares, and bind them in the bundles to burn them, but gather the wheat into my barn. Here we see that even the ideas of the most faithful servants of the Elohim as to the setting up of his kingdom and the weeding out of the tares are not the same as the Elohim's plan. It certainly is not. We witnessed that there for 32 years at Kermit, being taught that the Adventist Church represents a time period when she's on the scene as being co-mingled with wheat and tares. And we were certainly co-mingled with wheat and tares at Kermit. They just passed in and out our church. There was no gates, there was no walls put up. There was no locks on no doors to keep people out. And so we certainly represent the Adventist Church to the fullest extent in that regard. So it says here we see that even the ideas of the most faithful servants of Elohim as unto the setting up of his kingdom and the weeding out of the tares are not the same as the Elohim's plan. For this cleansing work belongs only unto the angels of heaven. And this they will do in the time of the harvest after being commanded to do so, not before. Well, now, I wonder if Vitiholoff is confusing the angels with this cleansing work, with the angels with the fly slaughtering weapons. Well, I guess, yeah, you could associate those together, those five angels in Ezekiel 9, with the slaughtering weapons, because that's what the idea is, slay utterly old and not young, because those that had not the wedding garment on, yeah, that would be a way of cleansing the sanctuary, all right. Let's continue on. In this parable, we are also told that the spiritual harvest is a time, not a momentary work, and that it brings the end of the world just as naturally as the year's harvest brings the end of the summer. As you see, the separation of the wheat and tares takes place in the last day, and in the two different places. First, in the house of Elohim, 1 Peter 4:17, Matthew 13:47-48. Then in Babylon, Revelation 18:2-4. In the former, the tares are taken out from among Elohim's people, but in the latter, Elohim's people are taken out from among the tares, from the inhabitants of the devil, of the foul spirits, of the unclean and hateful birds. There are two fruits also. For the first are from the 12 tribes of the children of Israel, Revelation 7:2-8, the church, and the second from all nations, Revelation 7:9. Now the Adventist was worried about the teaching that 144,000 was all that was going to be saved in the world. And if they taught that, then they would teach also that's all that was going to be saved out of the Adventist church. Well, you know what? It couldn't be any closer to the truth, because that is all that is going to be saved out of the Adventist church, is that 144,000. Well, I'm talking about their family members with them. Whatever family members come along with them, that's added. So, and that's reading why the scripture says in the type, daily such as should be saved. First they converted the 3,000 on the day of Pentecost, brought them to the church that very day, but then it says after that it was daily such as should be saved. Out of the house of Israel, not from the Gentiles, because they were commissioned then to go to the house of Israel for the next 3.5 years after the Pentecost. Okay, Matthew 13:31-32. Another parable put he forth unto them, saying, for the kingdom of heaven is like unto a grain of mustard seed, which a man took and sowed in his field, which indeed is the least of all seeds, but when it is grown, it is the greatest among herbs, and becometh a tree, so that the birds of the air come and lodge in the branches thereof. Mustard seed being the smallest of all seeds, this parable shows that which is to start the kingdom will be very insignificant, contrary unto all human expectation. Nevertheless, like the mustard plant becomes the biggest of all herbs, so the kingdom shall grow and become the greatest of all the kingdoms. So we're in the infancy of this kingdom now, but we can start to grow now. Now that we've got the last tares out of our midst. So apparently we have truly been in the Ezekiel's 9 investigative and cleansing work for the house of Israel all this time. This being contrary unto all human planning, it is but natural that those who like the Nicodemus and continue to be ashamed to be identified with something that is unpopular, hated and insignificant, will as a result be left out of the kingdom. Matthew 13:33. Another parable spake he unto them, for the kingdom of the heavens like unto the leaven, which a woman took, and hid in the three measures of meal until the whole was leavened. For the kingdom is here again shown to start with something small. But that little thing is to be like the yeast in a loaf of bread. What could the leaven be but an unpopular message borne by some insignificant one and put into the church? The loaf? Well, the leaven is in the dough now. Just watch it leaven the whole. Matthew 13:44. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto treasure hid in a field, the which when a man hath found, he hideth, and for joy thereof goeth and selleth all that he hath, and buyeth that field. Those who will gain entrance into the kingdom are here represented as searchers of the great treasure, and when they find its location, the field, they are very eager to make it their own. They are certain of its worth, and count it not a risk to sell all they possess, whether much or little, to obtain the kingdom. Okay, now, this House of David literally fulfilled this vision here. We literally fulfilled this parable. Says those who gain entrance into the kingdom are here represented as searchers of the great treasure, and when they find its location, the field, they are very eager to make it their own. Okay, so we were down at Kermit, and we were coming to the close of our sojourn there, 2002, 2003. But you know, a few years before that, Yahweh had led Verlus on a journey, and he brought him down to this area right where we're at today. And Verlus Johnson, by the Spirit, got out of his car one day traveling through this area, and he said, yeah, he walked around out there on the ground, and he said, you know, the Spirit tells me this is where we're going to move to, this is where we're supposed to move to, right here at this area. Right here where we're at today. So, Yahweh showed Verlus Johnson the location of the field for the kingdom. Here's the parable. And Verlus Johnson, when he found this location, he'd come back home and from preach the sermon, and from his pulpit that day, he says, yeah, we found it. He told how the Holy Spirit directed him to stop and get out and walk around. He said, this is where we're going to move. And everybody got excited because we felt that Yahweh had led Brother Johnson to the location of this field where this kingdom is to be set up. And so that's the reason why we're here today. So when we closed down at Kermit and had our separation down there, Brother Johnson decided to stay in Kermit after all. Well, Yahweh told me to come right back this area. And when we did, he led us right to where we're at today. And so we found the field. We found the location for it. Liberty Hill, Texas. Well, you know, Alan didn't, he didn't believe that. Alan really didn't believe that. Because he moved out. As soon as he got here, he stayed with us a year in Liberty Hill. But he had to get out. He went to another town. And then he moved on further away to another town in another county. He's moved at least 50 miles away from the field that Yahweh had designated for this kingdom to be set up. And now he's completely left the church. He's no longer ministers with us, fellowships with us. And I'm not saying that a miracle won't take place, that he may not be back one day. I don't know. That remains to be seen. But what I'm saying is, there are people that recognize where the field is at once it's been found, and they stay with it. There are those that are with the company that found the field, but spiritually they don't see it. That's the reason why they don't remain in the field. Okay, it says, those who will gain interest into the everlasting kingdom of the David are here represented as searchers of the great treasure. And when they find this location... the field, they are very eager to make it their own. They are certain of its worth and count it not a risk to sell all they possess. And that's what we did, believing that we were supposed to move down here because of Rollis Johnson's experience. We believed it. And so we owned our own home. It's paid for us and back home. And we had low living expenses, and I was running two businesses. I had two businesses going. I had a inventory control business going in the cities in Texas, and had been for over 20 years. And then I was running the produce business. And I had two businesses going, being very successful at it. And nevertheless, I give it all up. I sold my trailer at the end there from running my produce. I said, I'm going out of the business. And I stayed with my inventory business because it did not interfere with me anywhere I moved to. It did not interfere with my ministry. So I stayed with it, but I gave up the produce business. And I sold it, and then we sold our home. And we thought that was wonderful, knowing that when it was time to sell our home, that Yahshua would sell it for us. And sure enough, he told me what to do, and within 1 week we had our house sold. They are certain of his worth, he said right here. He said, the field, they are very eager to make it their own. They are certain of his worth, and count it not a risk to sell all they possess, whether much or little, to obtain the kingdom. But they sell, of course, is not only lands or houses, but anything which, if not disposed of, would keep them out of the kingdom. So Rollis Johnson said, after he'd made about four trips down here over a five-year period of time to search out this land, or a seven-year period of time, actually, he made at least four or five trips down here. And the last one, he came to me and asked me if I had any idea what we should do. And we were in another city, away from the field that it was shown to brothers. We was, oh my goodness, we was 200 miles away in another city. And I said, yeah, we're to go right that nameless valley, right that area where you was shown there in Liberty Hill. That's where we're supposed to go. He said, well, let's go. So he came to me in a city that's 200 miles away from the field, meet up with me, and then he asked me, he said, well, do you have any idea of a location? We're all out of options. I said, yeah, right down there where you were shown to begin with. He said, well, let's go. So we drove about 200 miles. He and I drove about 200 miles. Okay, he says, they are certain that they are making a good investment. That they are to get much more out of it than they put into it. On the other hand, those who are foolish, who do not know the value of it, feel that they dare not make the investment and consequently will be the losers. After Rollis Johnson, after all this evidence, that last trip that he came and we got together, and he said, well, you lead the way and I'll go with you. So he went with me and we spent all day on a 1,000-acre piece of land that Yahweh has shown me earlier. The Spirit told me this is where we're supposed to move. And we spent a whole day with a guide showing us over the land. It had a river running through it. It had seven mountains around it, fulfilling that prophecy in there in Ezekiel about the seven mountains round about Jerusalem. And it had that beautiful river and springs of water coming out of the ground. And I took pictures of it. I got the pictures this day of all that land. And when the day was over, Rollis Johnson said, yep, this is it. The Holy Spirit told him that this is where we are to end up. They had already built 25 or 30 houses, living quarters on that land. They had a big tabernacle already on that land, 60 foot wide and 180 foot long. Had a built-in kitchen system and dining rooms and the whole nine yards. All there for the taking. And when it all was said and done, Brother Johnson says, no. When he got back home, he says, you know, we can do everything here we can down yonder, says. We got all of our place paid for. So, So he had it all paid for. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. So that's where he lived, and that's where he ended up, and that's where he died. Okay, and what happened before he died? They had to take him out of that his place, move him out of the city into a rest home, and he lost everything. Never ended up with one, just the clothes on his back, that's all he ended up with. And by my leadership and obedience, Yahweh led me to this goodly, back to this goodly land, and to the place where we're supposed to be for right now. Okay, Matthew 13:45-46. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a merchant man seeking goodly pearls, who, when he had found one pearl of great price, went and sold all that he had and bought it. Those who are to inherit the kingdom are here again represented as searching for a very valuable jewel. The kingdom's truth. This is your jewel. This is your valuable jewel. The truth of the kingdom. And when they find it, they count it not a gamble to sell all that they have in order to make it their own. And I still can't believe what I heard out of Alan DeLong's mouth here before he left here. The last time. And never came back. Brother Johnson published the truth. Everything he published was the truth. You don't publish anything. I don't understand what you teach, but I understand what brothers teach. And so Vertus is laying, he needs to go back to where Vertus is buried at, in Kermit. He needs to go back there. And he needs to go and go to his gravesite. And he needs to bow down there, and he needs to pray, and thank Vertus for publishing him the truth. Okay? He needs to go right back to where he sold out and was led away from. He needs to go right back there. They know that they are getting a bargain, that such an investment will actually make them rich. Both the man who bought the field containing the great treasure and the man who bought the pearl of great price sold everything they had in order to close the respective deals. But even though it took everything they had, they both did have enough to buy what they wanted. So it is that it matters not who we are, how rich or how poor we be, if we make up our minds to sell all and buy the kingdom, we will have just enough to buy it. Oh man, Yahweh performed so many miracles for us, getting us out of Kermit and bringing us down here. And Alan was a witness, and he was our leader of the caravan. And we followed him down here. I told him where we were to come to, and we followed him. He saw miracle after miracle right with us, and yet he walked away from it. Because it didn't work out the way that he perceived it should work out. I think he's probably unhappy because Yahweh didn't make him the leader, because he was younger and stronger, and he was just as smart as me, you know. He figures, and it don't take much to be as smart as me physically, I mean, you know, fleshly-wise, but to have the mind of Yahweh is another thing that the person needs to try to acquire. That way, when you get the mind of Yahweh, it makes no difference what your IQ is. If you agree to let Yahweh's mind be in you, then you excel all the rest anyway. Matthew 13:47-48. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a net that was cast into the sea and gathered of every kind, which when it was full, they drew to shore and sat down and gathered the good into vessels, but cast the bad away. For the net must represent the truth, the message of the kingdom, as it is cast into the sea, published and sent out. It is bound to catch good and bad. But when the net is drawn unto the shore, the bad are then cast out from among the good, and the good are put into the vessel, into the kingdom. Hence, merrily, because one is attracted by the mighty truth, does not mean he is safe. His chances of staying forever with the truth depends on his meeting the Yahshua's expectations of him. Matthew 13:52. Then said he unto them, therefore even every scribe which is instructed unto the kingdom of heaven is like unto a man that is an householder, which bringeth forth out of his treasure things new and old. And he's right here talking about every scribe. Well, you know what a scribe is? They're a lawyer. They're an interpreter of the law. That's the priest of Joshua, the son of Josedek, coming out of Babylon. Ezra the scribe. He was a priest. Okay, he was their interpreter of the law. So he says, here the master plainly points out that the Elohim's messengers of the kingdom bring out of the word things both old and new, things that are known and things that are unknown unto them. Thus it has ever been in the unrolling of the scroll, and thus it must be now. Okay, Luke 14:16-17. Then said he unto him, a certain man made a great supper, and bade many, and sent his servant at the supper time to say unto them that were bidden, come, for all things are now ready. In this parable it is made known that in the closing hours of the probationary time, at the supper time, about the end of the day, heaven is to send a message unto them that are bidden, unto them that already know the gospel of Yahshua, unto the members of the church, for the servant is to inform them that everything is now ready, that they should now come in for their great and long-expected supper, a supper which they are to eat in the master's mansion, the kingdom, not in their own. Okay, so this master's kingdom is right here in Liberty Hill, Texas, where he brought us to. Yahshua brought us and showed us the location of his kingdom and brought us right here by the Spirit, where we're at today. Luke 14:18-20. And they all with the one consent began to make excuse. The first said unto him, I have bought a piece of ground, and I must needs go and see it. I pray thee have me excused. And another said, I have bought 5 yoke of the oxen, and I go to prove them. I pray thee have me excused. And another said, I have married a wife, and therefore I cannot come. Those I here mentioned did not excuse themselves from accepting the gospel of Yahshua, but they excused themselves from going into the master's mansion, from taking their seats at his table. Yes, according unto the parable. Those who had money to buy land, oxen, and houses, also to marry at the time of the last call for the supper came, all excuse themselves with the one consent. But the poor and afflicted, those who were in the streets and in the lane, so to speak, who had nothing much of their own and were in need of everything, were glad to go in for the supper. Okay, this brings the last close of our study. This audio contact is at the 11th hour call, and that's number 11. Click on the audio archive. We're going to close this service now with a song. No one ever cared for me like Yahshua. I would love to tell you what I think of Yahshua, since I found in him a friend so strong and true. I would tell you how he changed my life completely. He did something that no other friend could do. No one ever cared for me like Yahshua. There's no other friend so kind as he. No one else could take the sin and darkness from me. Oh, how much he cared for me. Oh, my life was full of sin when Yahshua found me. Oh, my heart was full of misery and woe. Yahshua placed his strong and loving arms about me, and he led me in the way I ought to go. No one ever cared for me like Yahshua. There's no other friend so kind as he. No one else could take this sin and darkness from from me. Oh, how much he cared for me. Every day he comes to me with new assurance. More and more I understand his words of love. But I'll never know just why he came to save me. Till someday I see his blessed face above. No one ever cared for me like Yahshua. There's no other friend so kind as he. No one else could take the sin and darkness from me. How much he cared for me.